Today's episode is sponsored by Redneck Ganesha. Are you sad? Lonely? Do you love board games with humble beginnings that turn into my hair is on fire endings? Well, the game American Empire can help with at least one of those. It's a modern game with old school heart and more than your weekly recommended allowance of snark. In this game, you can buy senators with cold hard cash, crush your opponents with your CEO, litigate your friends into submission, snatch states away from special interest, and indulge in an arsenal of dirty tricks. And if you're at Gen Con, make sure to find the Redneck Ganesha booth and play American Empire, the game that'll let you live forever.
Hosting for the Board Game Design Lab podcast is sponsored by Quartermaster Logistics, the leader in crowdfunding, fulfillment, and warehousing. Check them out at qmlogistics.com. Welcome to the Board Game Design Lab podcast, a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Each week, we want to bring you an insightful interview on a specific topic in board game design, to help you design and create games people love. And now, here's your host, Gabe Barrett.
What's up, my friends? Welcome to the Board Game Design Lab. Today, talking about design groups, talking about design retreat, talking about the value in surrounding yourself with other people, other designers, other developers, other people that understand the game design thing. I don't know if you're like me. Sometimes you talk to certain friends and they just don't get it. And so what does it look like to surround yourself with people that get it, that understand? And we're talking to J.R. Honeycutt, a guy that he knows a thing or two about design retreats and design groups. J.R., welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much, Gabe, for having me. I'm excited to be back here again. I love talking to you about game design. It's so much fun.
Absolutely. It's been cool to kind of see you here and there as we, you know, our paths intertwine and hanging out with you at Dice Tower Con. You've got some really cool stuff that I am super excited about. We were talking about Unmatched earlier in through emails. I am so pumped about Unmatched and like what that system holds and the possibilities with that.
Oh, man, me too.
Yeah. And so congrats on all the success, all the cool stuff you're working on right now. I can't wait to see all the things that are coming down the road. But before we get into our task at hand, talking about design groups and design retreats, kind of who are you? You know, update the listeners on who you are since the last time you were on the show, different projects you're working on, that kind of thing.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I'm J.R. Honeycutt. I am a professional game designer developer. I'm the co-owner of a company called Waitress Games with Brian Neff. And we do consulting, design, and development work. I've got a few things coming out at Gen Con coming up soon. As you mentioned, Unmatched, which is from Restoration Games and Mondo Games, which lets you pit, you know, heroes that you may have heard of, like King Arthur, Alice in Wonderland, Robin Hood, or Bigfoot, versus other heroes you may have heard of. They just announced the Jurassic Park set coming out, so like Dr. Alan Grant or some Velociraptors, and fight them in these crazy places we've invented, and it's a lot of fun.
And Bruce Lee. Don't leave
and
out
Bruce Lee. Sorry. If you want to see Bruce Lee fight a T-Rex, then this is the game for you.
I want the Shaquille O'Neal expansion as well. Can we make Shaquille O'Neal happen? That'd be awesome.
Amen.
Like Shaquille O'Neal versus Bigfoot.
Talk to Justin at Restoration Games at Gen Con. Go tell him you want to do Shaquille O'Neal. I'm super in for doing all of the Space Jam set. I am so the Space Jam set. It is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful thing. Also, Machihoro Legacy is coming out at Gen Con here in a couple weeks, and I'm really excited to see that finally hit tables and see families enjoy that. So,
yeah. Talk about two things that no one ever thought were going to be put together.
Machikoro and Legacy. You know, I got to tell you, that's the first thing that anybody ever says is like, wait, Machikoro Legacy, really? And I'm like, oh, trust me, we're going to tell this. We're telling the oldest Japanese fairy tale over the course of 10 games in this beautiful setting. And nice. It's really going to surprise some people with how good a story it tells.
Yeah, I'm excited about where we are as far as a industry right now, because all these things keep coming up that's like that no one ever anticipated, no one ever thought would be successful. You know, sure. Machikoro Legacy or Stonemaier Games and Birds. I mean, you just don't think this is going to be the case, and it's just taking off. So I'm super excited about where you're headed, where we're headed as a industry. But let's get into the topic, man. Talking about game design retreats, talking about game design groups. First of all, let's define those things. Just one at a time. Like, what is a game design group as far as your definition?
Sure. I mean, it's, you know, anytime at least two people who make games get together and work on them together. But I think, you know, what you're looking for is Facebook groups or meetup groups, things like that, even Reddit groups, where people get together and play each other's games. And even if they're not necessarily working on a design at the moment, they go to playtest other people's stuff. You see these things happen at unpub events and protospiel events and things like that. And you're going to have a lot of these events that happen at conventions too. But I think what designers may not know is that all sorts of local areas, cities like Omaha and St. Louis and Dallas and Orlando and New Jersey, and I guess New Jersey's not a city, but I don't know, any of the cities in New Jersey. Jersey City is what I'm trying to say.
Newark, maybe.
Newark. Jersey City is where Gil lives, I think. Yeah. These places usually have like a Facebook group or a Reddit or a meetup group of people who just come together to play test games together. And it's a fantastic place to go and get the kind of feedback that you just can't get from your family, you know, to be around people who think about the things that you think about from a totally different perspective, but still focus on the same problems. It's really useful.
Yeah, definitely. And also people who are much farther down the road than you mm-hmm. are. Something I've talked about on the show so many times before. You want to surround yourself with people who have already been where you are right now, because then they can help you get further down the road faster, right? When I was playing football, I wanted to work out with guys that were stronger than me. I didn't want to be the strongest guy in my workout group because it's not helping me as much, right? I want to be around people that I'm forced to pick up heavier weight than what I'm comfortable with, because that's going to make me stronger down the road. Now, one couple things real quick, just definition wise, you mentioned Unpub and you mentioned Protospiel, just in case somebody's getting to the podcast late, you know, they just started this week or something like that. What are those events?
Oh, sure. So Unpub is short for the Unpub Network. It's a series of conventions and events where people come and bring games to be playtested by like attendees at the event. The big one I think everyone knows about is Unpub in Baltimore every year. This is the 9th one coming up next year, I think. And Protospiel works similarly. I've never been to a Protospiel event, but sort of the same thing. You have an event that's dedicated to playtesting games and getting feedback, and publishers might even show up and also like look at games and maybe sign them or give feedback and things like that.
Yeah, what's great about these things is there's just so many people there, and they're all there for one purpose, one goal, and that's to make great games. Right. You know, I love conventions, you know, going to Origins or going to Dice Tower Con, that kind of thing. It's awesome. But a lot of times the prototypes are off kind of, they're the redheaded stepchildren. They're off in the side room that nobody really comes around. But Unpub events, Protospiel events, we're all here for the same purpose. And that's to play test games and, you know, develop games, make them better. And so it's really cool just to be around so many people, you know, there for the same goal. Now let's get into like, what is your definition of a design retreat?
Sure. Well, I guess I'm self-serving a little bit here, since I'm hosting these as a series of events. But I think I was talking to James Hudson about this from Skybound Games. He did this for his team recently, just him and his people, just going somewhere and getting away from the world a little bit and just working on games together, almost like a summer camp for, you know, a weekend or a week or whatever it's going to be. It's this idea of coming together and really focusing on each other's work and creating an environment where you can sort of have that give and take over multiple days, so that you're not just like only playing your stuff or only playing somebody else's stuff, but instead sort of creating this little community where you can all support each other and give feedback and receive feedback. And we'll probably talk about this at some point later, I'm sure. It changes the way that you give and receive feedback and really improves the quality of it when you're around people who are there for the same reason.
Yeah, for sure. And if you think about like any major sport or even non-major sport, every sport, what you do before the season starts, you do training camp. Like you come together as a team, and you know, maybe you've been off on your own working out, that kind of thing. But now it's time for everybody to get together, and we're getting ready for the season to come up. And so it's cool that companies more and more are doing this for their people, just to get in the same room, get in the same area, and work on games that are going to be coming out in over the next year or so. There's just so much value, and putting that many brains in the same room, you know, in theory, you gain a lot more than the sum of its parts, right? And so I think more and more of these things are becoming just the way to do things, as far as if you have a company, you know, getting people together in the same room. There's something about that personal contact as well that you don't get when it's through Facebook or it's an online community or a tabletop simulator, that kind of thing. Those things are awesome and amazing, and we need to be part of those for sure. But there's something about getting in the same room with a group of people that are all there to make games great. It really exponentially grows the games, as what I've found.
Sure.
And so, like, what do you find valuable? Like, give me maybe some personal stories about what you found valuable in, you know, with design groups or design meetups, design retreats, that kind of thing. Like, give me something from your experience.
Yeah, for sure. I'll give you a general, then a couple of specifics. In a general sense, I think that one of the hardest things to do as a designer is to receive feedback productively. And what I mean by that is to, while you're watching somebody play your game, take something away from it that has nothing to do with yourself, like me and how I feel about my game, but it's about how other people feel about my game and what it is to them and what they're feeling. And it's really hard to do that because we create stuff and then like we feel attached to the thing we create, and it's hard to separate those things. And a lot of what being, I think, a professional in this little world is like figuring out how to get feedback from your playtests and from when you share your game and do something productive with it based on what somebody else thought, not about how you feel about that thing. Working with other game designers, A, provides a great environment where people will simply just play your stuff so you can repetitively do it more and more. But also, it at least gives me a chance. I can remember being at Dallas Games Marathon, being at some playtesting events at BGGCon down in Dallas, and even doing this at Unpub 4 and Unpub 5 a few years ago, like being in the hall late, way at night, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, sitting in a room with John Gilmore, Doug Lewandowski, or any number of other people, just watching them playtest and listening to how they received feedback and watching their process and learning from them, not just like what questions to ask, but like what attitude to bring to the table, what approach to bring to note-taking, like all the little technical things, like you were saying, like working out, right? It isn't just like you go in there and throw weights against the wall. There's like techniques that you build up that you get better at, that you learn from people who've been doing it longer. And those techniques make you more efficient and make you better, right? Like it's the same thing in playtesting, like watching other people do the work better than I do teaches me things that I can do better myself and how to get better at that job as I do it. It's so nice.
Yeah, for sure. And this actually made me think, again, my sports brain. So a while back, I was watching SportsCenter or something like that, and it was baseball season. And Pete Rose was on the show, and Alex Rodriguez were on the show. And they were talking about some guy, I don't even remember who it was, but he was in a pretty bad slump as far as like hitting. And he just couldn't get on base, and he had gone a few games without a hit, and it was really, really bad. And the host asked Alex Rodriguez and Pete Rose, two of the greatest baseball players of all time, like, what would you tell this guy to fix his, get out of this slump? And Alex Rodriguez is like, well, you can do this. You can change your swing and this and that and the other. And he's like, okay, cool. And they said, well, Pete, what do you think? And Pete said, well, you don't ever want to change your swing because the swing is what got you to the major leagues. Don't change your swing. And Alex Rodriguez was like, okay, you just, basically just eliminated everything I just said. And so Pete was like, what you need to do, take a step forward in the box, take a step back in the box, take, wherever, just move around and just look at things from a different angle. But don't change your swing because your swing is what made you, $10 million. Like, don't change that. That works. You just need to maybe change the way you're looking at things. Change your perspective. Change some of your angles. And I was like, oh, dang, that's really cool. And then Alex Rodriguez was like staring at this dude like, wow, why didn't no one ever tell me this over my 20-year career? this is amazing. And Pete, he went into much more depth. I'm summarizing, obviously.
No, but
like,
sure,
he went into the depth of like all these different things about the nuances of hitting and things. And it was cool to see Alex Rodriguez, one of the greatest players of all time, just standing there watching this man, this great, another Hall of Famer, or should be, talking about these things. And like, it's such the same thing when you get in a room with John Gilmore, with Rob Daviau, with Matt Leacock, or whoever whoever's better than you. Like, they don't even have to be a greatest of all time. They just need to be one chapter ahead in the book that you're reading, right? And just learning from them, just seeing how they do things, and just the little nuances, because it's, especially when you get to a certain point, it's the tiny, like 1% things that make you better. When you're just starting out, you can make big leaps and bounds once you realize certain things. You can jump 20%, but you get to a certain point and it's little incremental kind of things. It's like, what can you do to surround yourself with people that are going to help you get incrementally better? I think is a really good way to look at it. Do you have any other like cool stories?
Yeah, I was at Dice Tower Con this year, just a couple weeks ago, actually. And I want to find this woman's name. I played a game about birds, and it was the second time that I'd played it. I want to make sure that I find the name of this game so that I get it right. It was Flocks, and it's designed by Barb Hirschfelder, Barbara Hirschfelder. And I'd played it at the design retreat that I had back in June with Mike Mihalsik from Coalition Games. And Barb had taken feedback that we'd given her and made a new version of it. And I played it at Dice Tower Con. And for the life of me, I don't know if Barb has published games. I think maybe she does. But her perspective coming into it was that of a teacher. I believe she's been a teacher for quite some time. And teachers are better game designers than a lot of game designers are, right? Because teachers have like an audience of kids who don't want to pay attention and have to learn something, and they get immediate feedback on whether something is good or bad, and they often like don't necessarily get a second chance, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like you've got to entertain a classroom full of kids and get them to pay attention and do something right away, and like, at least as I understand it about being a teacher, that's pretty difficult to do. So watching her design and iterate, and then listening to the way that she thought through problems from the standpoint of her being a teacher, and I've done this with a bunch of other people, Julia Hearn at Greenbrier Games is a fantastic writer and a fantastic designer, who also like was a, she taught young kids for a long time, and her approach to design mimics a lot of that, like how to generate engagement and get people to sort of buy into what you're doing right away, like how to grab attention and hold it. And watching someone design from that perspective is so fascinating because I've never had that experience, right? And it creates these interesting situations where like I honestly learn every single time I playtest somebody else's games, I learn something because everyone brings a different perspective into it. Another great example is John Brieger, who is a freelance developer. John worked in sales for a long time, like, and his job was to figure out like how best to organize advertisements and stuff in a storefront so that people would see things and be most likely to engage with their product and stuff, which is like, you know, it's like a huge like user interface, user experience problem. And it's like a really, really big deal. And it's not something people in game design necessarily ever think about, right? Like we don't think about product packaging and productization and all these things. And so listening to John talk about what he does, that experience he brings, it sort of does the same thing. And one of the reasons to tie it into design retreats, at least, that I love doing that is to get people who have different perspectives to just let me see those perspectives and how they manifest themselves in the way that they make games. I definitely do learn from the people who have been doing this forever, but it, amazingly enough, I also learn a lot from people who may be doing it for the first time, right? Because like none of us went to school for this, I don't think. Maybe somebody did, and we're all kind of coming at it from our own angle, our own sort of self-made, like homemade place, right? And it's just amazing to see all the things we can learn that way.
Yeah, for sure. And this is a really, really good point, because not only are you surrounding yourself in these moments with game designers, you're also surrounding yourself in these moments with people who have very different skill sets. Like you're saying, right. John Brieger and his past in product design, things like that, or advertising, or you're finding people who are accountants, or you're finding people that understand logistics or shipping, or whatever it is. Like it's not possible to be great at all the things that game design requires you to be great at. Because it touches so many different things. And so when you surround yourself with other people, they can bring so much to the table that you'll never pick up on your own, or at least it'll take you forever. And so you can kind of speed up your process. Yep. And another thing, going back to the teacher thing, this is something I find is kind of with personal experience. I think teachers are also really good at understanding empathy, which makes them better able to give feedback and receive feedback, because they're, you know, all day long, they're trying to figure out how do I, you know, like you're saying, how do I get this kid to pay attention? How do I get this kid to listen? How do I get this kid to you know, try harder or to study more or whatever it is? Well, empathy is where that comes from, is understanding what that kid is going through at home, understanding, you know, what kind of challenges they're facing in life with maybe the way their brain works, maybe what they, you know, dealing with, you know, on the sports field or, you know, their family life, whatever it is, and empathizing with them and kind of figure out, okay, how can I best teach that person, that kid? Yep. And then you bring that into the gaming world, and it just translates so well. And so I think learning empathy is also another thing that can really help all of us. And the best way to do that is to get around other people and just practice and just work through it. Yep. And listen, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, empathy is a huge part of, I think, any design team, any design environment. Like, I was talking to Jesse Wright about this at PAX East back in April, just about like, you know, when you're giving feedback, taking a moment before you give it to confirm with the person who'd be receiving it that they're ready to receive feedback, or asking them what kind of feedback they want, you know, just like making sure to do the human thing of like confirming that the person you're speaking with is ready and willing to receive what you're about to say before you say it, right? Like so often in communication, we forget to do these things, and they create a huge impact on how well we communicate and how things get better as we work together.
Yeah, it's a great point. One of the questions I've tried to get in the habit of asking before I give any feedback is, what are you trying to accomplish with this game? What do you want? Sure. Are you wanting to get this published? Because if you are, that's going to change my feedback, because I might tell you a little bit more as far as the logistics, or maybe this game's going to be too heavy as far as the shipping. Like, what are some ways you can lighten it up so it doesn't cost as much to ship? Like, because that's what publishers are going to be thinking about, right? Component costs, that kind of thing. Or if you're saying, sure, I want to go to Kickstarter, it's like, okay, that's a different conversation. Or if you're saying, I just like this game and I want to make something for my kids, okay, that's a different conversation. And so, but it helps me kind of empathize with where they're coming from and the perspective they're in, and give better feedback, as opposed to just saying, I hate, sure, this game because of this thing and this. And like, well, you know, maybe that's not helpful at all. And so just kind of going from that angle. And I think design retreats, sure, and design groups are a great way to do this. Let's talk about relationships. As far as building relationships through these things, what have you found is the value in that? Maybe some personal things, but just maybe in general as well.
Well, I got to tell you, design can be a lonely endeavor, you know, like most of us, I think, work best at our laptop at 2 o'clock in the morning sometimes, or, yeah. You know, it's slamming through tasks at the end of the day when the kids have gone to bed and we've got a minute that we can sit here and focus on something. Like, a lot of the work of design, even if it's just prototyping and stuff, sort of happens in solitary ways. And I think that finding people that you can share that with, not even necessarily share that time with, but just share that experience with, to know that you've both sort of done this together and understand what it's like, creates this real sense of camaraderie that's very nice. Maybe more than just that, though, like, I think it is, I know, at least for me, it's difficult to take something that I've created and that I'm very proud of and put it on a table in front of other people and not even necessarily ask those people to critique it, but to make myself emotionally vulnerable to what they think, right? Like, I can love something and be convinced that it's great, but then if they don't like it, then I have to accept that A, how I felt was probably wrong, and B, that this thing that I thought was right isn't, right? Which is both an emotional and sort of an intellectual beating, right? That, like, I was both wrong on feeling and wrong in mind.
Yeah.
And there's a real trust that comes with seeing, with having other people do that in ways that are caring, but also specific, right? Like, I would never say blunt, but certainly honest, right? Like, there's a difference between giving bad feedback and giving feedback badly, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I didn't like this game isn't necessarily giving feedback badly, depending on how it's framed, right? But, like, I hated this game and you suck is giving feedback badly, right?
Yeah.
It generates trust when you see people, when people interact with you while you're vulnerable and they care for you and give you what you need and respect you as a person as you do it. And it generates trust to do the same for other people. And in those environments, I think you can get really interesting and cool collaborations, because I think all of us are looking for those places where we can be vulnerable, because to make things for other people, you have to in some way be empathetic and willing to feel what they feel, right? Which requires some amount of vulnerability no matter what. And creating spaces where people sort of walk into it, understanding what it feels like to be in your shoes, makes it so much easier to open up and take the risks that are putting your games in front of other people. And that helps a ton, right? And doing that sort of naturally builds friendships, both professional and personal, and makes it easier to want to be around those people again. Maybe the most important thing that's come out of the design retreats, besides, you know, a couple dozen published games and a lot of projects and all those things, like, I know I see people hang out with each other at conventions or work together on projects or travel and see each other on the road and stuff that I know met each other at one of my game design retreats and that I introduced myself. Yeah. Right. And then after having spent a week together once or twice and a couple years with the conventions, now they're like really close friends. And I know that at least in some way I had a part in that by introducing them and providing a space for them to sort of get to know each other. And to me, that's incredibly validating. And it's one of my favorite parts of working in this world at all, is it's so close knit and it's so small that when you do get a chance to work with people, you tend to make these really nice friendships.
Yeah, it's such a cool feeling. And I think the word you keep bringing up that's so vital in this is trust, right? The thing that these design groups and design meetups, design and retreats, they create is a space where we know we can trust each other. And then we get to know each other. And especially when you do a design group, maybe once a week or biweekly, once a month, anything, but you're building that consistency, because that's where trust comes from, right? Being able to talk to people consistently, understand where they're coming from consistently. And that way, when something happens or they say something a certain way, you've got this consistency built up. And so you maybe don't take it as harshly as you would from a stranger, right? So if I've got a really good friend who's a musician, he's a singer, and he's been working on an album for a while. And he sent me a demo a couple months ago. And he said, "Hey man, what do you think?" And it sounded really bad. Like the way that he hired some guy to come in and mix it. And like the way that guy was doing it, it just made my friend not sound like himself. It was the weirdest thing. Wow. Like, he just didn't sound like himself. And so I sent him some feedback. I was like, "Hey man, that's cool and all, but like, that's not you. Like, he doesn't sound like you. Like, you need, like, don't pay that guy any more money. Like, stop." Like, it's not working.
Right.
You know, if I was a random stranger, he's going to take that differently than, you know, being one of my good friends for the last, you know, 8 years. Right. And so, because the trust that's been built up, and I could say, "Hey man, this sucks." And he would look at me and go, "Thank you for telling me that. I really appreciate you letting me know, because I trust you." Right. I know that you're going to, you know, that you want what's best for me. You're not just some random person online with an opinion. Like, you actually care about me, and you care about me enough to say, "This sucks, do something different." Right. And so that it all comes from trust and building that up. And there's no shortcut, really. It just takes time and consistency and being in those situations.
God, it's hard to overestimate how important it is to to have somebody that can tell you that something is bad and you listen to them, you know?
Absolutely.
It matters so much.
It really does, man. But that's where I think there's this interesting threshold you cross. Like when someone that you barely know says, this sucks, right? Versus someone that you really know really cares about you says, this sucks. It's just such a different, it's just a different threshold that's been crossed, right? And because one, you think this person is just out to get me or they don't like me or whatever it is. And the other time you're like, man, this person loves me enough to tell me, you know, that I have a booger on my face or that I'm walking around with no clothes on or, you know, whatever it is, you know, there's too many emperors out there with no clothes and nobody wants to tell them. Right. And I can only imagine that maybe you just don't have anybody that cares enough that you've surrounded yourself with that is willing to say, hey, you need to put some pants on, you know? And so it's so valuable, but the only way to do that is to build these relationships. And like we're talking about, design groups, design retreats are such a good way to do it. And so let's kind of go into more like tips and tricks. Like what in your opinion are some of the best ways to get the most out of these events, whether it's an UNPUB, a Protosfield, retreat, designer group that meets weekly, whatever, like how do you get the most out of that?
Oh, sure. That's a really good question. Number one, I think it depends on the kind of event you're going to. UNPUBs tend to be, and I think Protosfields too, tend to be really like regimented. Like you're going to have a table for 4 hours and you know, you've got a sign, it says what you're doing. And so you can sort of prepare to know, I have this exact amount of time. I want to show this game on this day, et cetera. Whereas like maybe going to your weekly game design meetup is a little different. You just kind of bring what you have and that's it. I would say number one, tips and tricks. Number one, go into every single event that you go to. And honestly, go into every single playtest you go into with a goal. Have a reason that you're playing that game, that you're playtesting that game that time. I learned that from Ignacy from Portal Games, and I cannot say enough how important that's been for me. Even if that goal is just, I want to see new people play this game, and I want to just see if feedback from a previous version is confirmed with this version. But if you have to write it down in your notebook, have a goal. You know, why is it that I'm bringing this game to this event for these people this day? Number two, prepare yourself emotionally to be vulnerable. And whether that means like taking yourself out for, you know, like dinner and a movie the night before or getting a massage or, you know, like giving yourself like a night of reading and chilling out or drinking some wine or whatever it is that you want to do, drinking beer and watching the NBA or, you know, football or whatever, which is what I imagine you and I would do. Like do something to put yourself in a place where you're comfortable getting a bunch of feedback from people, right? So that you're not defensive as much as you can avoid it. Get yourself in the right place mentally and emotionally to be there. And then number three, with all of the time that you can, that is time that you're not having your game playtested at the moment, to the degree that you can, spend all of the time you can playing other people's stuff. Like one of the things you see that's kind of a faux pas in game design groups is like somebody will show up who's never been before and maybe doesn't sort of understand the etiquette involved. Like they'll sit there and have their game played 3 or 4 times and then leave. Not realizing that like you didn't stay and play anybody else's stuff. So people aren't going to be particularly like excited to play your game again. And B, you missed the way more important part about going to a game design meetup. Like it isn't just about getting people to play your game. You can do that and that's useful, but there's so much more to learn from playing somebody else's game and being forced to give feedback and think about the problems they're facing and what they're doing. Right.
Yeah, that's an incredible point. I think it also speaks to like the social currency that that runs these things, right? So, you know, you're probably not coming in saying, hey, I'm paying $20 to be here, you know, whatever. No, you're paying time and you're going to put some time in and other people are going to put some time in and all this time together. Hopefully we're going to make each other's games better, but there's a social currency involved. And I think a big part of that is just respecting people's time. So one, like you're saying, not coming in and taking without giving, right? But also not coming in and having a playtest that is not going well at all. And people are like, don't want to be here anymore. And you just, you got to grind. And we're going to finish this thing. Well, it's like, no, man, quit wasting people's time. Like if it's not going well, if you have enough notes and whatnot, just say, hey, thank you for your time. Let's play one of your games and not feel like you have to finish it out or whatever it is, just grind it out. And so just being conscious, again, empathy, being conscious and empathetic about other people and their time and schedules and what they've done and showing up prepared, I think is another one. I think one of the greatest things about these groups and retreats and whatnot is it forces you. It's kind of like your mother-in-law that she's coming for dinner. And so you got to get the house clean, man. Like she's coming. She's going to be here in a second. And so, you know, we've got to vacuum and dust and make all the beds and clean the bathroom because she's coming. She's going to be here. I think these retreats and these groups are such incredible deadline makers for people to get things done. And so take it seriously and prepare. And when you show up, be ready to go. And that way you don't waste people's time, because it makes them, you know, want to play your games as well.
It's a huge point. Like, you know, I do this for a living. And so like, I have deadlines in place. Like, I've got stuff I'm trying to do, but if you're doing this as a hobbyist or just cause you think it's fun, like it actually can help say, oh man, next Friday I have an event I've got to go to. I better have my prototype ready. Otherwise, like, I've wasted that time. It gives you that thing to lean on, right? Like that short-term goal that you don't always have in front of you when you're not doing it for somebody else. You made me think of a thing that I wanted to say. My games are good because I've play tested them a bunch, but I am a good game designer because I have play tested other people's games a bunch. Ooh. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Definitely.
Yeah. Like, my games being played makes my games better, but I get better at this because I play other people's things and learn what they learn and see their problems and see their solutions. And I think that, like, you know, if we're thinking about how to make a game better versus how to make better games, like, how to make better games isn't playtesting one game a bunch. It's getting out there and playing all the things that are out there and learning from people and growing your own perspective and vision and everything.
Yeah. So. And I think that's the juice, if to kind of put it that way. That's the juice of these things. You know, you got to think C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien were writing buddies. And of course they were. Look at the work that they created. Of course, you put those two men in a room to kind of yell at each other and edit each other's stuff and say, hey, this is dumb. Oh, this is great. Like, of course they came out with Lord of the Rings. And of course, you know, C.S. Lewis and the Lion, the Witch and Wardrobe and that whole series of Narnia and all that. Of course they did. You put those two people in any room, they're going to come up with amazing stuff. And so, like, what does it look like to put yourself in a room and learn? And oh man, it's such a cool thing when we put ourselves in a position to grow like this. And so, yeah, like, any other tips and tricks as far as like how to get more out of these things?
Yeah, I mean, just go and, you know, put your best work on the table, or put your worst work on the table. Just put your work on the table. I think, like, one of the concerns, or one of the things I'll hear people say is, this is a very human moment of like, hey guys, you know, I'm really sorry. Like, please don't judge me. Like, I've tried, or this is just kind of a bad prototype or whatever. And then everyone's like, no, it's okay. We'll play it. Whatever. Not a big deal. People sort of think they have to have this like precision crafted prototype or these perfect components or whatever. And I think it's really helpful to go and then see somebody like, say, a Rob Davio or a John Gilmore or like a Ryan Lockett or somebody. Actually, Ryan's a bad example because I'm sure Ryan's prototypes are beautiful.
He's got a little different skill set than the rest of us.
Right. But like I'm thinking about somebody like Marcus Ross, who's just like this mad scientist engineer whose prototypes are just an amalgamation of all these pieces and stuff he glues together. And like. You've got to see that even people who do this aggressively all the time are just putting stuff on a table and playing with it. It isn't about having a beautiful looking thing. Like, nobody has a finished product, and it isn't about that. It's just like, what could you make to get on the table as quickly as you could that does the best that it can at creating the experience you're trying to create with this game in the moment, right? And I think seeing other people putting garbage on a table, getting bad feedback and going, oh boy, that was really bad. Thanks, everybody. And then laughing about it, taking some notes and moving on. And that's really wholesome and healthy, right? To see that, like, just because you do it a bunch doesn't mean you get it right. You just have done it a bunch and you kind of know how to get from bad to better faster.
Yeah, and I think that's something we're missing so much now just in modern society. We don't see people's behind the scenes. All we see are the Instagram filtered, you know, it took me 47 tries to get this perfect selfie, but that's the one I'm posting, not the other 46. And it's so valuable to see people you look up to and realize they struggle too. And realize that Rob Davio, Matt Leacock, and Eric Lang, they make really crappy prototypes. And they have really bad ideas. And they've thrown more bad ideas away than anyone would ever imagine. Because they're just people too. And we're all just creative folks trying to figure this thing out. And it's almost like when you've gone through a really traumatic experience and then you meet somebody else who's been through something similar and you kind of have this, oh, you too moment. And you can kind of have that connection, that relation of like, oh, you understand, you get me because you've been there too. But it's the same kind of thing with creative stuff, you know, and understanding that we've all made really bad prototypes and had really bad ideas and had really terrible playtest sessions where it went nothing like we had hoped, nothing like we had planned. You know, we've pitched games to publishers and they looked at us like, are you crazy? Like, no, this is terrible. Like, we've been down those roads too. And so, like, let's just kind of be in solidarity, you know, camaraderie, build a community together and kind of build each other up and help each other grow and all that kind of thing together, as opposed to, like you're saying, being isolated and by yourself. Because when you're alone, you start buying the lie. You know, you can look in the mirror and go, I'm not any good. And there's no one there next to you to say, no, whoa, shut up. You're fine. You know, you need other people. That way you don't lie to yourself, because it's so easy to buy your own lies when you don't have other people there to motivate or encourage or say, no, it's okay. Let's do this other thing. Let's go get something to eat. You know, it's hard to do it by yourself. And I think that's so valuable for these things, especially when you can do something consistent. You know, if you can have that group that's consistently once a month, once every 2 weeks, whatever it is, or just online, you know, just going on the BGDL Facebook community and be like, hey guys, I'm having a terrible day. This is what I'm dealing with. What are your thoughts? And people just encourage you and say, hey man, you're cool. You got it. You got this.
Yep.
It's so valuable to have just mentally, you know, the psychological aspects of creating anything. But let's say, for instance, I don't have a gaming group. I don't have a game design group. I'm in the middle of nowhere. What does it look like to start one of these? Like, how do I do it myself? If it doesn't exist where I am, you know, I search meetup or whatever, and it's not around. How do I just do it myself?
You know, that's a great question. I've been in those shoes myself, just in past places that I lived, trying to find people to make groups with. And I think there are a few resources that help a lot. Board Game Geek has some really active game design threads and groups. So you can maybe find somebody nearby you who is also looking for a playtester or something like that, and you can just meet up and play each other's stuff. Reddit does the same thing. Facebook has a lot of design groups that are both for local areas and also larger ones like your group, obviously, and the Card and Board Game Designers Guild. I think those are great places to try to find somebody who's somewhere near you that you could meet up with. And if you can't do that, maybe you can go to a library or go to just a local game event and see if people there are interested in just, hey, like, would you play test my game? Right. Like, just try to find people sort of one at a time and start to say, like, all right, well, like, you know, create an event. Like, next Thursday, I'm going to go to this game store. I'm going to sit there and I'm going to play test my game. Game store said it's cool. And if anybody shows any interest, I'll tell them, hey, next week, bring your thing and I'll try yours next week. Right. Like, there are so many more people that have games that they want to make than we realize. Most people just don't know how to start, or have started and have no idea how to continue or where to play it or whatever. So sort of just kind of vocally creating that atmosphere and that opportunity usually is enough to find one or two people that'll kind of come out of the cracks a little bit and want to play with you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's one of the reasons I started this podcast and the community overall, because I knew there were a lot of people out there that just needed, you know, what is step one? What is step one through five? Right. And then we can get into six through a million later. But like, what is it like just to get going? How can I even just make a prototype? What is it like to turn my ideas into something real? And because I feel like like you're saying, there's so many people out there with games in them, and they just need someone to kind of lend a hand and say, here, come on, let me show you the ropes. And so I feel like a lot of things we can do as designers in general is just be ambassadors, right? And when someone says, oh, I've always wanted to make a game, you know, because a lot of people say stuff like that. I'll say, oh, I've always wanted to, you know, insert whatever it is here and, you know, whatever behavior. But when in that moment they say, oh, I've always wanted to make a game, you say, oh, yeah, tell me about it. Like, what game would you make? Like, how do you think it would play? What would it be similar to Dominion? Would it be similar to Monopoly? What would it be similar to? And you don't come in as, oh, I'm a game designer, and kind of look down your nose at people. And like, just, we're all just people, man. And so just being an ambassador for this niche of the hobby is going to bring more and more people in. And I think as we have more diversity coming in with different kinds of people from different kinds of background, and the more we're kind of diversely looking out for like more people to bring in, it just makes everything better. You know, it's the rising tide that's going to raise all ships, right? And create just an incredible hobby, gaming and design wise. And so what does it look like for you to be a recruiter? You know, if you can't find it, make it. And if you can't find, you know, other designers, make other designers, you know, and yeah, you know, help them maybe see something that, let me ask you this, JR, let me get a little behind the scenes. What got you into this thing? Like, what was the thing that like, flip the switch, you're like, I'm going to do this thing.
I had a friend named Boyan Radakovic who at BGGCon 2014, said to me, hey man, people who are good at games are often good at designing games. You should try to design something. That was BGG 2013 is when that was, BGG 2013. And so I tried to make stuff, and I started trying to make stuff. And it turns out that he was partially correct. Like, I was good at games, and I had a pretty good knack for what made a game feel fair or how to be, you know, skilled at stuff. But the lifelong journey that I started on was realizing, like, how to feel things, how to make people feel things, and how to care about what other people feel. And if I am good at this, it's because I've spent 6 years now listening very hard and trying to learn what it's like to feel what other people feel. If you'd asked me 6 years ago, I'd have told you because I was a stock trader and I was good at stats and stuff, that'd be why I was good at game design. But it's not that. There's a lot of people who are much better at that than I am. Like, what I try to focus on is like the feelings that are invoked and just like the vulnerability and the ownership and the possession and like the communication that goes into creating an experience that people enjoy. So
yeah, there you go. And I think your story is very similar to a lot of other people that are now, you know, either full-time in the industry or have games published or you're working on it, is you had somebody there to tell you, hey, I think you'd be good at this. You know, yeah. One thing I've learned over the last few years, especially because of social media and the internet, is haters never stop to think, maybe I shouldn't say this. You know what I mean? Like, haters just hate on things. That's just what they do. But how often do we, you know, if you're a person that's not a hater, how often do we hesitate? Like, haters don't hesitate, but how often do we hesitate and go, well, you know, I don't know if I should say this compliment or this encouraging thing. Like, how often do we do that? You know, and it's...
I mean, me? I try never to hesitate to say encouraging things, but...
That's the way we all should live.
I'm a freaking Care Bear, man.
That's awesome. I struggle sometimes, man. Like, you know, I don't want it to be kind of weird. I don't want it to take it the wrong way, and I don't know why that's in me. And I feel like I'm not the only one that just hesitate. I want to say something nice, I want to say something encouraging, but then I'll hesitate. Whereas haters don't ever hesitate. And so I think we need to realize that as people that do hesitate, as haters aren't taking a day off. So I can't either. Right. And so,
yeah.
But you had somebody that looked at you and said, hey, you have permission to make cool games. Because I feel like there's a lot of people that just kind of like never thought about it because nobody's ever really given them permission to make the thing. And it doesn't cross their mind. But, you know, when you say, hey, you have permission to make one of these things yourself, I think you'd be good at it. I think you could make something really cool. You have permission, go do it. And maybe people are just sitting on the sidelines waiting for someone to, you know, call them into the game.
Sure.
All right. So let's kind of switch gears a little bit and talk about more about retreats. And so like when we say retreat, like that could be, I guess, a day, it could be a week. You know, the time frame doesn't necessarily matter, but like what are the best ways to get the most out of retreats? Does the length matter? Do you gain more doing a full week, a 2 week thing versus a weekend? Like, kind of give me some more in-depth ideas about getting the most out of these things.
Sure. Well, at least the retreats that I run, the Waitress Games Design Retreats, I do a week at a time. So Sunday afternoon through Sunday afternoon. And I love a week because it's enough time to disconnect yourself from kind of what's been going on in your day-to-day life and get fully invested in the space that you're in with the people that you're with. Like, a weekend is wonderful, and I've got people that'll come for a weekend for my events, and that's totally great, and I'm glad they do, and they get a lot out of it. But having, like, you know, waking up and like having coffee with the same person 3 days in a row, and then like a fourth day in a row and a fifth day in a row, sort of just changes the way it feels. Like, you start to build this familiarity, which makes it really easy to be sort of boisterous and jovial and vulnerable and happy in the same space. It makes it feel a little bit more like summer camp or like a getaway than just like, you know, going to a convention for a weekend or something like that. So personally, my preferred length is a week, but, you know, like, it's certainly, you know, like, certainly a day is better than nothing, or 2 days is better than nothing, et cetera. I think it's just about taking the time that you can and devoting it to caring about this endeavor for a little while. I find that in anything that I do, uninterrupted time is like the most important thing. It's like the golden thing that I seek in my life is uninterrupted time to do something that I care about. And at least when I run these retreats, I try to make sure like all the food is paid for, all the meals are paid for, prototyping, printing, all that stuff is all paid for. So somebody could come and like literally just like not have to spend any money at all. They could show up without their wallet and they'd be okay. The idea is that I want to give people an uninterrupted time, moments, etc., to just focus on this thing that they adore and be in this moment as long as they can. And it works.
Yeah, it's interesting. I read an article a while back, probably a year ago or so, and it was talking about the perfect length for a vacation. And they were trying to use some science and use some data to determine, like, how long should we go on vacation? And one of the things they talk about is how Americans, we take, like, the shortest vacations of anybody in the industrialized world. Like, we just don't vacate very often. I think we had more people per capita that didn't use their vacation days than any other country that these people studied. Like, it was just crazy. We work all the freaking time. And they talked about how, like, what is the better length for vacation? And I want to say they said, like, 10 days was a really, like, the sweet spot. Yeah. Because it takes 3 or 4 days to kind of disconnect completely, for your brain to finally turn off to all the things that you have left behind and stop worrying and thinking about, oh, what's about this at work and about these emails that are going to come in and this project. And I hope Susan, you know, doesn't screw everything up, whatever it is, right? It takes several days for your brain just to get to a place where it can even enjoy the vacation and the relaxation things. And so, yeah, I like the idea of just coming in and for a whole week, hey, you're going to disconnect from whatever you got going on at home. And we're just going to focus on this. We're going to hang out, get to know each other, build some relationships, play some games, develop some games, play tests, eat some good food. It sounds great to me, man. And I'm super excited about what you have going on with the retreats. And I look forward to hopefully joining you for one sometime down the road. And,
oh, man, I'd love to have you. Come on.
Yeah, that'd
be really so much good work done, man. It'd be so fun.
Oh, man, yeah, I'm pumped. Hopefully, whenever I can get back to the daggum United States. I love Honduras. It's been great. But it's time. I'm getting ready to go home, so to speak.
Sure.
And hopefully that works out soon. I've just got a few things I got to work through as far as some adoption things and whatnot. We got to finalize. And hopefully that happens before too long, because I'm excited about what you're doing. We can go ahead and kind of talk about this. So the BGDL and JR and Waitress Games, we're doing a little partnership, but working with each other as far as these design retreats. This is something I believe in that I think are really cool, and I want to promote, and I want to help in any way that I can or the BGDL can as far as these things that you're doing, because I find so much value in them just from a psychological standpoint of helping people, you know, just mentally, but also, you know, helping to make great games, bringing great games into the world. And so I'm excited to work together with you guys in the future and just see kind of what that turns into and push people your way, because I really believe in what you're doing. Now, is it only in certain cities, or like, what's your plan as far as like, how does this whole thing work? If I want to go to your retreat, what does that look like?
Yeah. So first off, let me say it is an honor that you are as interested as you are. I really appreciate that, man. The content that you create is fantastic, and I know a lot of people really benefit from it. And I'm sure that you know that and you hear that, but I can tell you, just like, I have had a lot of people come to me separately and say like, hey, like, I heard about you through BGDL, or this is a group that I go into, or whatever. Like, people love the stuff you make, and I'm glad that you do it. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I'm glad to do it.
Yeah. So one of the things that's fun about these design retreats is the way that I run them, I can kind of do them anywhere I want to, anywhere that I can find a location for a week that I can rent out that has enough space and everything that's, you know, like close enough to an airport that people can get there, et cetera. And so one of the things that I'm spending this year doing is figuring out sort of the best places that I want to do that. So right now, the next two that are happening are in St. Louis. That's in August and September. And I've got one coming up in Maine, probably, that's going to be, I think, in the winter. I'm also looking at doing one down in Austin, Texas at some point. But part of what the next 6 months or so of discovery for me is going to be is like, how do I pick the right places to do these that are exciting? Like, do people want to do them more like in like vacation getaway spots where it's more expensive to go, but there's more to do? Or do people, and this is what I prefer, want to just be somewhere like in the middle of nowhere where we can just hunker down and work on games for a week and not have to think about anything, right? And it's sort of a matter of like figuring out for the right group and the right location what makes sense, right? I've done them in Atlanta and in St. Louis and at a lake near St. Louis and in Texas now, and each of them have been great for different reasons, and the locations have all been different, and I'm kind of just figuring out what works so far. But yeah, I mean, if somebody really wants to go to one and they've got a place they really want to go, just shoot me a message through my site and we'll make it work.
Hey, I know some remote places in Honduras, man, where you ain't gonna find nothing, ain't no cell phone service, ain't nothing. And so,
oh my gosh,
you know.
I just have to be able to take my iPhone board game turns on the various apps that I play board games on. As long as I have just enough Wi-Fi to get in like my patchwork plays, then I'm okay.
Well, there you go. All right, so like, let's say somebody's sitting on the fence. You're like, gosh, I kind of want to do this. Maybe it's something I need to do. What would you tell that person that's kind of straddling the fence, not sure? Like what value are they going to get out of one of these?
Yeah, you know, it's always tough to ascribe a specific value, like a monetary value to this, because everyone's games are in different places, right? I have friends who are publishers who have brought games and then said like, oh, like this is what I needed to get published, and now those games are published and exist. I have friends who have come three times and have worked in the same game, each of the same three times, and it might never get published, but they come because it's motivating to them and they enjoy it. I think the first and most important thing that you're going to get out of it is just a sense of like togetherness, community, welcoming. You're going to feel good about yourself and what you're working on. You're going to feel like you've progressed your game. If it's a question of monetary value or financial value, I can tell you that for the publishers and the people who are just hobbyist designers and things like that who've come, the most common feedback that I've gotten has been either, this is worth every dollar that I spent, and it's only the first day that I've been here. And this is the most productive week that I've had ever in designing games. And so those two things make me think that it's like a worthwhile investment of time and money to come and do it, right? Is that the people who have to think about how they spend their time and money doing this have said that this is the best way they possibly could have spent it. And then from an emotional standpoint, like if what you think you want is to make a bunch of friends who work on games and have a great time working on your stuff and working on their stuff and sort of just like cohabitating and enjoying each other's company, this is going to be exactly that. It's exactly what you want. I know I have people who come who have started coming instead of going to some other conventions because they get the experience they want from a convention from this, which is just like hanging out with kind of a smaller group of people, 10, 12, 15 people, having a great time with everybody, playing the games they want to play, which is their own, their prototypes, other people's prototypes, and then getting to go home without it costing them a ton of money and all that stuff, right? So it's been very good. I don't know if that answers the question.
No, absolutely. I think so. You know, I was reading this blog the other day and it was talking about the behaviors that millionaires have that the rest of us don't and why they're millionaires, right? And it was kind of clickbaity, but it was some interesting stuff. And one of the things it talked about was how much millionaires invest in themselves, right? And they put a huge percentage of their wealth goes back into becoming a better businessman, becoming a better athlete, whatever, you know, the reason they're a millionaire is they invest it in themselves. And I find that to be the case with this. Like if you want to be great at this thing, then invest in yourself, like believe in yourself enough to put some money, to put the time, to put the energy and effort into yourself. And like you're saying, maybe instead of going to Gen Con this year or next year or whatever, maybe take that money and then do some kind of design retreat or do some kind of thing that invests in you. Right. And that's one of the things that I want to continue offering is just ways for people to invest in themselves, whether it's through books or podcasts or whatever it is, just to help you grow and just constantly be trying to get 1% better. Can you be 1% better today than you were yesterday? And the cool thing about these retreats, why I believe in them, is I think 1% is a very low number for these retreats. I think you can you'll get to the end of these retreats. And if you're a new designer, especially, you could be 400% better by the end of these things. If you've been around for a long time, you can, you know, 5, 10, 20% better than you were when the week started. And so these are just incredible ways to invest in yourself and invest in other people. And for, again, for all of us just to kind of come together as a community, grow, get better, make great games.
I agree. I've seen the advantage, I've seen the work and I've seen the benefits, you know, firsthand half a dozen times now. And like I said, I'm biased, but I love it. If I wasn't running these things, I'd be going to them.
Yeah, definitely. Well, again, I'm really excited about what you got, you guys over at Waitress Games and you know, what you're doing and the things that the future holds. Do you have any kind of closing thoughts? Anything you want to kind of leave people thinking about as far as, you know, why game design groups or game design retreats are important or, you know, anything else?
Yeah, I want to speak to a specific kind of person. You're listening to this podcast and you've probably listened to a dozen of them. You've got an idea that you're really excited about. Maybe you've even mocked it up on note cards or put it up in Excel, and maybe you've even got a prototype in your living room that you mess with, and you just haven't taken it to show it to anybody else yet, to go to a design group or anything like that. And it might be that you don't have the time. It might be that you've got a little bit of fear in terms of how that would go, or you don't think your game is good enough. It doesn't matter if your game is good enough. You are good enough. Every one of us that has ever put a game on a table for the first time has been exactly where you are right now. And so I encourage you, if you can, you know, take your game, go to a meetup, leave your game in your backpack, just play other people's stuff, make a few friends, like laugh a little bit, see what people are doing. And then the next time you go, the second time you go, get out your game and play it. Write down all the feedback you get and just enjoy the process of making yourself vulnerable and learning something. But the key takeaway is you are good enough to do this because all of us were in exactly the same spot you're in right now. So you have my permission, what Gabe said earlier. You have my permission. Go make a great game and enjoy yourself doing it.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. Well, JR, man, I really appreciate your time. Appreciate you coming on the show. Good luck with all the 4,711 games you got working on, you're developing. I'm super excited. Things I can't even tell other people about. The stuff you got coming down the road. And so good luck with that and all the other work and things you're doing and all the retreats and everything else you got going on right now.
Well, thank you so much, Gabe. And obviously, thank you for the time being on the show. I love to do this. So thank you again for that.
Yeah, man. You are always welcome here.
Thanks for listening. Hosting for the Board Game Design Lab podcast is sponsored by Quartermaster Logistics, the leader in crowdfunding fulfillment and warehousing. Check them out at qmlogistics.com and find all sorts of game design resources, bonus material, and chances to win free games at boardgamedesignlab.com. And until next time, keep designing, keep playtesting, and keep creating great games. Did I mention keep playtesting?